you were the first female head coach to take a team to the NCAA Division I championships at UT Arlington.
It was funny because I was young enough and oblivious enough to not feel the pressure of any of that.
Now that's really good.
So I just went, of course we are. And, you know, I just, you know, I'm so hard driving. And I was so young, as you well know, I think I was the youngest coach ever to do any of that either. I just went full force ahead and I didn't question myself much at that time. You know, as you get a little older, you start to see how the real world is working and you start to recognize some of those things that might have slowed me down at that point, honestly.
This is the Leave It Better podcast, powered by the Side Out Foundation. Here's your host, Hall of Fame coach, Janice Kruger.
Today, our special guest is Kathy George. Kathy is the head coach and director of operations, vice president of the Grand Rapids Rise Professional Federation Volleyball Team. Some pretty exciting things that are going to be happening for her and her team is that she's made the championship top four teams of the Professional Volleyball Federation that is happening in Omaha starting on the 15th Wednesday, and the big $1 million prize, and we're hoping she gets an opportunity to be in that, will be on the 18th. Kathy is a phenomenal coach and so excited for her to be in this first playoff for the league. Prior to this new position in professional volleyball ranks, Kathy coached collegiately for 35 years. In those 35 years, she became the winningest coach in the history of Michigan State University's volleyball program. And there's many other things we're going to talk about in the podcast. Welcome to the show, Kathy.
Hey, Janice. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. I'm so excited to talk to you today. This morning, they were saying that I was levitating when I was talking about you and what you have done in your career for volleyball, for your athletes, for your family, for your community. It just puts a huge smile on my face and makes it such a positive thing, Kathy. I just adore you for that.
Well, thank you, Janice. And it's been we started coaching against each other a long time ago. Yeah, all started there when we got to know each other. And so it's great to be able to keep up with you all these years. And thanks for your support.
Yes, I remember you back then, this funky little...
I was
head
a young
coach
thing,
coming in. Was so tenacious in everything that you did. And your teams played that way. For sure. Your team played that way. We only got to do that for 1 year. And then I think I left in 88. I wasn't there in your second year there.
Yeah.
So yes. There was a quote here that you made. I never thought in my lifetime there would be a pro volleyball franchise in the United States.
Absolutely.
What can you say about that? In your lifetime, you've come so far in so many ways.
Yeah, but you know what? There was no momentum. It didn't feel like there was momentum. And over the course of the last 5, maybe 6 years, you're seeing the growth of volleyball, not just from a participation level, because I think that's been, you know, I think there's been great participation, but it's the interest and the push from TV and fan bases and boosters and, you know, the overall interest in it just grew. And so people started to notice, people that wanted to invest or, buy into, started to recognize that importance and the importance of women's athletics as a whole in this nation.
Mm-hmm. And they started to recognize you because you were the first head coach of the first city's franchise in the Grand Rapids Rise to be hired. Again, another one of your firsts, Kathy, which there are many, and we'll get to those.
Well, Janice, it was funny. I knew that Grand Rapids made this announcement. They invited me to come out for the announcement of the franchise, and I was not able to make it there and had talked to them, apologized for that. And, you know, conversations kept going. And I thought, well, shoot, I'll help out in any way I can, you know, maybe consult, maybe do, you know, give advice. How do you want to proceed from here? And really didn't understand as I started to hear the conversations changing, it was from general interest to, like, you know, coaching. And I guess I was, you know, a little taken back, like, okay, let's look at that. And as I pondered it, you know, I thought about all of the things that it's going to take to get a franchise rolling. And it's not just the coaching piece. It's going to be the entire program. How do you set a program in motion? You need to think about, you know, just the crowd, the event, the packing the stadiums, growing the state and the community and the far-reaching regions in volleyball. It gives you a chance to really to take one more step with that. And I've always felt that was a mission of mine while I've been in Michigan coaching at three different universities, to help the coaches coach, to help people, you know, just continue to grow this sport and grow women in leadership and all of those things. So it's always been a thing for me. So then it felt, yeah, I can do that. And we can get a lot of the young people and the coaches enriched through this experience. And we can just get it to hit the ground running. So I said yes. And it sat really well with me, which is very peaceful. It was a very peaceful decision.
Yeah.
I knew it was the right one.
Yeah. Awesome. We're going to come back to some of those questions in that area too. One more first of Kathy George is that you were the first female head coach to take a team to the NCAA Division I championships at UT Arlington. And it's been a little while ago, but I remember that and how amazing it was and how happy I was for you to reach that. And I know you are passionate. You're a hard worker. And what an honor.
You know, it was funny because I was young enough and oblivious enough to not feel the pressure of any of that.
Now that's really good.
So I just went, of course we are. And, you know, I just, you know, I'm so hard driving and I was so young, as you well know, I think I was the youngest coach ever to do any of that either. And, I was just on a mission and I was so confident almost to the point that, you know, before you know what it's really like in my 30s, I was looking back at, you know, and I started to ponder like the things that I was just so sure of. I just went full force ahead and I didn't question myself much at that time. You know, as you get a little older, you start to see how the real world is working and you start to recognize some of those things that might've slowed me down at that point, honestly. But I was very sure that we were deserving and we were going to just keeping one thing in front of us at a time. And we were just going to knock down that one and knock down that one and not, you know what I mean? Get there and put ourselves in a position. Mm-hmm. So pretty headstrong.
No, I wouldn't know that about you. I think you have a special walk. And I always enjoy when I run into you, I'm like, hey, Kathy, how are you doing? You're very polite, very kind. And then boom, you're on a mission. You got someplace to go to get something done. You're a doer. I have a comment that was made about you from Kathy DeBoer. I gave her a call and I said, can you just give me a couple things about Kathy? She goes, Kathy is the type of person who does less whining and more doing. She goes, that's something. How'd that get instilled in you? How did you become so resilient, so headstrong, so passionate in your endeavors in coaching?
I don't really know, but I am very driven and I'm a solution-based person. So I don't like the whining. I like understanding the problems, right? So what is the problem? And not in a whining, not about whining about it, but understanding what it is so I can get quickly started to solve it and break down those barriers from getting it to move forward. So that's, my mind has always been about that. It's about not wasting time on stuff like that. We can't do so many things about it. So let's move on and stop talking about it. I've just always been that way. Now, I don't know if that's through just my upbringing. My mom was a really hard worker. What was necessary to provide for your family, do what you need to do. My brothers were athletes older than me. I didn't get to do as many things as they did. So I was, you know, just, I'm going to show them, I'm going to go do this. And I'm going to, you know, and so when they wouldn't let me play in any of the games and I wanted to be in the games, you know, I made sure I let them know I was there. And, you know, so it was a constant battle.
Yeah, I can see you as that young girl.
Yes,
and yes. you know, I never got to see you play. You played at Illinois State. I believe you're a Hall of Famer there in their athletics program. Yes. I tend to think you're pretty tenacious, and you were an outside hitter. And I think I have a couple questions here, a couple comments from some players that talked about you and your description of that being an outside hitter and what that meant. You know, you got to have shots. You got to be able to do this. You got to be able to do that. So I can see you with that skill, passing that on to your players. How much fun was that?
Well, I look at the game, I think, a little differently than what I'm finding a lot of people do. But I was a 5'9" outside hitter. I wasn't this, you know, I wasn't jumping 11 feet and trying to, you know, overpower everybody that way. But I loved the block and I loved using the block and I loved figuring out how to score no matter what the circumstance. And so if there was a ball that was set inside, how can I terminate that? How can I score? If there's a ball that's outside the antenna, what am I going to do? How am I going to, you know, what am I going to do to maneuver? I felt like it was always so much fun to figure out a tough situation and still get it done the right way. So I think I always approached it that way. My setters always said, boy, you were almost better with two blockers than you were with one. And I was like, yeah, because I felt like the block was my friend. I could get I could get more kills that way than with, you know, just straight power to somebody. So I don't know. I always think about what it is and how you get something to work, whether it's an angle for a pass, you know, whether it's like, how do you get the ball to go where you want? I just have loved that, the focus on the thing that makes it go where you want it to go and do what you want it to do. So being in control of the ball instead of the ball being in control of you.
You're very strategic.
I just love thinking about all that stuff.
You know, that to me sounds like I got some strategy. I see this and I can counter that with this.
Yes.
I love that in a player. And I'm sure you do too. And was something you probably worked hard at teaching.
And it's hard because there's so much doubt and perfectionism. There's so many people that want to listen to how to do things instead of why are you doing things or what is the product I'm looking for and how can I get that product? And we train in such a way that we forget what we're trying to do. You know, so if I'm a setter, I'm trying to get it in a certain pocket to get the hitters to have every shot available. Or if I'm a hitter, I'm waiting for this to assemble, or a defender, I see the block and then I go instead of I go and then I watch the block. And, you know, what are you trying to see? What are you trying to gather? There's a lot of players that are busy doing a lot of busyness and we need to, you know, slow that down a little bit. And they hate mistakes. And so we stop being creative or trying to understand it better and use information to help us to win, not to just get to know that thing better because coach said so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's good. Yeah,
I don't know why. It just makes people paralyzed. I think there's a lot of paralysis.
Yeah. There is some hesitation, I guess, when you're asking the why, and that's harder for them sometimes to figure out. But when they get that, wow, what happens? It's amazing stuff that can happen because they have just then shot off in a rocket of growth.
Right. Well, it's the fixed mindset and the growth mindset, right? If you have a growth mindset, you want to know as much as possible to help you solve the problem. But if you're afraid to hear that you're not doing something well, you're focused more on the fact that you're being told you can't do something instead of like imagining all of the things that can help you improve, right? So it's a different look at things.
Yeah. That's why you're so successful. You've been so successful at every level, every place that you've been. You left a path of just brilliant coaching and development of programs. I spoke to Elena Scar.
Yeah.
And I asked her, I said, please help me. I want to make sure I pronounce your name right. And she goes, that's okay. I'm not sure Kathy can even get it right yet. So I had a laugh about that. But she said, she is the most passionate woman that I have ever met about volleyball, about the people she loves, and her faith and what she values. Everything that Kathy does, she does with her whole heart. You're never going to question anything about the direction that Kathy's trying to take you in.
That's so great to hear. That's nice, Elena. And yeah, it's, you know, and Elena has gone so far too. So I'm so proud of her because she's, you know, broadcasting now and she's doing so much. And just to see her take and watch her grow through college and then see, you know, she's always wanted to be in those, that field, and has been in journalism and, you know, broadcasting, and just watching what she's doing. I'm so proud of her because, you know, there is a time when you come in as an 18-year-old, you know, and where do you grow and how do you grow? And, you know, in college, let's face it, you're 18 to 22, you're really figuring yourself out. And then to kind of have things in your mind that you go for and you're dreaming about, and to see her make that happen is really exciting.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't know. She told me she's from Virginia. Yes, and actually played for a friend of mine, Sue Shefflett.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And she's a 6'2 setter. Is that?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
I didn't know that either. But yes, she was in your very first Rise match.
Yes.
She did the color commentating.
Yeah.
And she felt so proud to be there, to be with you, to experience that together. She just goes, that was just one of the most amazing experiences for me to share with Kathy. How'd you feel about all
that? It was amazing. Oh, it was awesome. Like, we met the night before, and I couldn't even describe how proud I am of her and what she's doing. And so we met the night before, and then after the game, we came up, you know, she came up and we got a picture and hugged, and, you know, just felt really good about that whole thing. And It was awesome. It was an awesome beginning. Yeah. And it was great to share that with her.
I'm sure in all the years that you've coached, you know, the pride that you feel and the you know, the success of the players that you have worked with and helped grow, not only as volleyball players, but your passion for them as people has really left you with so many beautiful connections in your life that have made things just feel really good for you. I don't have any other examples right now, but I know there are many. And if I have to dig, Kathy, I will. Is there a story or so that you might be able to share about? And I know you don't want to pick one or two people out,
yeah,
but maybe just in general.
It's just in general. It's every time, you know, you do grow so close over that period of time of that development. And sometimes it's through tough things, right? So sometimes you know, they're upset with you over something, or you have to reprimand them for something, or you're, who knows? But these relationships continue to grow through the good, the bad, the ugly. But when you trust the people and their heart for what you're trying to do and how you're trying to help them grow, and you trust them as people as well, those relationships just strengthen over the years. And I think that maybe in their first year, they don't understand as well as they do as they grow through it, you know, and as players go from year to year to year and they see themselves blossoming, they see themselves maturing, they see themselves understanding competition differently. You just watch that and you're so proud. And then you see them become women and they're in the working world or they're doing great things. Then you're hearing about them with their families. You're seeing them. They're coming back. It's so fun. At so many of these matches, we have former players coming in, you know, or texting you or following up with you. You know, it really is a big part of why, you know, I have always done this and stayed in this coaching profession.
Yeah. Yeah. You retired in less than like a little over a year. You retired from Michigan State after 17 years, super successful there, made impact on a lot of these young women that I'm hearing from. And as you said at the beginning of the show, you kind of got into hearing about this franchise and the conversation somewhat changed. For you, was there any hesitation or what was the most important part of being able to be the first coach, the first woman coach to be in this league that is so important for us, I think, in the United States to provide a platform for the, 350 athletes that would leave each year to go overseas to play? What was that like for you?
I think once I realized that the conversation had turned to coaching and I thought about it, it was the first franchise and it would have been the first hire. So I felt like it was important that I did it because I have been in coaching for a long time. I'd coached at three different universities in the state of Michigan. I knew the importance of this nationally. I knew that I know so many people out there in the coaching world that maybe we could get them to start coaching in this league and do those things. But I felt it was an important step, and it was one that I had to do in order to legitimize some of this whole product. And I wanted to do that because I didn't really, that wasn't available when I was a player, you know, and it hasn't been available for anybody, but the accessibility for that now, the dreams that the young people can have now to stay in there and actually use the talents and gifts that they have for something other than just collegiate volleyball. And that, not that that's bad, that's great. But the fact that they can think about it later on and still be near family and friends and not have to change their whole life to do that. It's just, it was something I felt moved to do. And then with the final decision, it was, I felt at peace to do it. I felt it was the right thing to do. And I did not hesitate at all. And I felt that it was just going to help the rest of the league get going. So I did it.
Well, we are better for you deciding to do that in the world of volleyball. That I can tell you for sure. So you talked a little bit about the dreaming, and I read something back when one of the first articles, maybe when you took the job in East Lansing with Michigan State, and you said, my dream wasn't only to coach in the Big Ten, but to lead a team to national prominence, to national championships, and along the way, a Big Ten championship. Like, when did you start? Was this just something innate in you in terms of your passion and your possibilities that allowed for this beautiful statement and the confidence and the wherewithal to get out there and get it done? Where'd that all come from, Kathy?
Again, I think it's drive, and I have never, like you said, been afraid of hard work. And I know, you know, what it's going to take to do that. And I will die trying to do something. So I know that. And so I knew that going into the Big Ten, I mean, it's a very challenging conference. There's no doubt about that. And I looked forward to that competition level. And I looked forward to getting in the fight and getting, you know, like getting all busy doing all that stuff. And I love the strategy of it. I love everything. You know, I knew that we were in a conference that you could, like, for a couple of years, we had teams that finished eighth in our league getting the Final Four. So yeah. It wasn't really, you had to win your, it was harder to win a conference championship than it was to go to the Final Four or win a national championship. Wow. Because the battles that you had to have day to day were so, so difficult, but it prepared you, you know, those difficulties prepared you to then put yourself in a position to win a national championship. So, you know, I think that people can get lost in the shuffle of, oh, we didn't win every game, where I'm like, what did we learn from those games and how do we get better and how does that strengthen us and toughen us and, you know, callous us a little bit to get to where we need to be. And so looking at it that way, that's what gave me confidence to say those things and put ourselves in positions to do those things. And you know, I felt like we had a lot of NCAA, you know, runs and did some really great things. Again, did not achieve that championship level in either the Big Ten or the NCAA tournament. But I felt like we have so many All-Americans, so many, you know, far reaches in the NCAA tournament. I felt really that the teams achieved a great deal. And I, you know, again, when players walk through that and they grow tougher and stronger and more together and understand what it's like to fight for something, I think we've won. We did accomplish all of those things in them.
So. Yeah. I think your leadership, your abilities as a coach to train and teach, your love for the sport, your love for your athletes, and the care that you had. When I was talking to Elena, this is something she spoke about regarding you. She wasn't talking about the wins or the losses, and although there was a lot of that for them, for you at Michigan State, she talked about how that relationship with you and what they felt with you was so impactful in their life. Maybe it's coaching women, right? they listen to you, but when they know you love them, no matter what, they're going to go through the, you know, throw the wall for you to get the stuff done you're asking them to do.
And sometimes they're mad at me because I push them beyond what they think they can do. And so, but they don't at times when you're going through the process, you don't realize that really is out of love, because I want you to not set your sights so low on with yourself and your abilities. And I see something in you that's beyond what you see in you, because I do believe that there's these, I don't believe there's a finished product. I think we're always growing. So I just know, don't sell yourself short. Like, stop it. Stop believing those things about yourself. So I'll get on them a lot about that. But, and then they're like, oh, she just won't leave me alone, you know? And, and honestly, if I did, that meant I didn't care. And so,
yeah, that's right. When you stop talking to them, that's a problem. That's when they should feel real bad.
Yeah.
you made another comment that I read, and I love this. It's easy to be average. Anybody can be average. The challenge for teams is this team willing to do what they need to do to be above average? And as a coach, it's my job to make sure they understand how they can reach their goals. Through working in the gym, through all the development teamwork that's out there. I found that just so important as a coach. You really touched me with that. It's like, gosh, you got right to the, you know, right to the point. And this was, again, when you first started coaching at Michigan State. Does that still hang with you? Is this something that you've been there, done that? I don't need to use that anymore.
I think I actually see even more of that now, because everybody wants to fit in. Everybody wants to look the same on social media, or they're trying to be something they're not, or what have you. And when there's that person that keeps pushing, sometimes people like to pull them back so that they don't feel insecure about their own self, you know, like what they're doing. And so if you do really good, then it makes me look bad. So let's have everybody all fit in this little average category. And I think that it drives me nuts, because we've got to start aspiring to be our best and imagining what that looks like and processing what it's going to take to do that. Right. What do I have to do to get myself there? And the frustration that people feel, you know, players will get frustrated with themselves or their lack of this, that, the other, and they waste time in really figuring out, like, what can I do in imagining the best later on? So I want to always push them to be their very best. And sometimes it was funny. I had a player one time that said, "You see all this in me and I'm afraid to let you down." That was a comment, actually, because I think I can be. And it was weird because she was sabotaging herself a little bit. And I was like, wow,
how'd you manage that?
That was tough for me to hear, because I could see where she was maybe placing that pressure on herself to be this thing that she wasn't yet. And I realized that she was thinking about the product of tomorrow's game versus what I was considering the product of a year or two down the road, you know, the immediacy of what they felt that should be, as opposed to me saying, hey, this is a goal that you can have for yourself, but it's not tomorrow's goal. It's the process every day to get that goal in the future. And I think it taught me that I can't put all that on somebody. They need to understand what I'm saying when I say that. So it was interesting, though. I'm glad she was honest with me about that. So that I could process it myself and, you know, figure out how to maybe change that a little bit with how I go about talking to somebody about that.
Yeah. Hi there, Janice here. I want to take a minute to tell you about something very personal and important to me, my job. I'm the brand ambassador to the Side Out Foundation, and I've been a part of it since it began about 20 years ago. Believe it or not, I was recruited to join the Side Out team by the founder's father. He looked me up online and asked me out to lunch. That's when I got to learn more about his wife, Gloria. Gloria is the reason this Side Out Foundation exists. Her son and husband wanted to give her more time, and it worked. Gloria was this fiery redhead that was so full of energy and joy and happiness. They'd invite me and my partner over to Thanksgiving, and Gloria would dance around the house. She always made me feel so welcome. I joined the team at Side Out for the very same reason we get athletes involved with our Dig Pink program, because I wanted to be a part of something bigger than myself. I wanted to see Gloria have more time, and I was thinking about all my female friends I could potentially be helping. One of the goals of this podcast is to let people know that they can help us help people living with metastatic breast cancer see more tomorrows. How? By harnessing the passion and power of youth volleyball to raise money that will go toward real research and clinical trials that really do give families more time with their loved ones. That's one of my favorite things about this job, is that you can actually see the results of our research and how it helps give people more time. For more information, head to our website, side-out.org. Now back to the show. Being able to really hear or listen to the people around you, whether it be your players or your assistant coaches or whoever, to work through and to be good with challenges. And gosh, were you this confident as a five-year-old? When did your confidence just kind of like, what your parents would say, yeah, Kathy was just a confident.
I was a handful. I was a handful.
Okay, a handful.
I was always a handful. I don't know if that was confidence or just, you have two older brothers and you just try to keep up with them. A lot of times when you do, if you do the study on the youngest child, they are those people that are always trying to, like my brother was 5 years older than me and the other one too. So I was always trying to keep up with them with what they were doing, and they were playing sport. And I was, like I said, trying to do it myself. And they obviously were in leagues before we had leagues available. Women's sports didn't have the opportunities as much. But yeah. I don't care whether it was playing hide and go seek or capture the flag or 500 or okay. I used to take a rubber ball, and we had our porch, and there was a sidewalk that came from the porch and it was brick on the back. And I would be pitching balls into this like square, and I was trying to pitch like boy sport, pitching not softball, but like baseball. And it bounces back at you and you catch it. And I just sit there for hours doing that, or playing off the garage or doing whatever it was. I just loved playing sports. I just did. So I don't know how early that started, but I kind of have a feeling it was early.
I think it was early. So one other thing I ran across in researching you and talking to folks is that, well, you shared with me first and said it here today, that you're a program builder. Like, that's something that you're able to see and look at all the facets and understand their importance is the foundation for if you're trying to build to the, to that top point. Again, I think this was a Kathy DeBoer shared comment that she said you shared a exercise. And I think the AD was Ron Mason, maybe, that, gave everybody in the department, here's your budget, here's your 1.5 or whatever it was, a million to run your program. Now, I want you to schedule a meeting with me and let's talk about how you're going to bring that kind of value to the program, to the university, to the, folks in the community, to your players, to even broader than that.
Yeah. And it was actually Mark Hollis that did that. Okay. And okay. He wanted every coach to go through that, and probably for every coach to recognize what was it. Why are we putting that much money into you, into your program? And what does that mean? And what is it going to do for your athletes? And how are you going to build that? Well, of course, I'm going to show you that. Like, we're going to get that out there. But but we had done so much in the community, and I really believe in growing my players. And we have been out there giving speeches and working with kids and just all over the place. And so we talked about that. We talked about how many, the fan base and what we were doing to grow that. We talked about the value to the growth in female athletes and what that was doing for them to build better leaders for the future. We talked about, but it really did make you think about the big program. What does this mean, and why should Michigan State get behind you and what you're trying to do? And it's not just, I think it's not just about how much money are we going to get back? But that's a part of it, because there's business involved in this. Yeah. But the exercise really brought you to validating what it is that you're doing and how you're putting it all together. I spent a lot of time in all the programs. When you say program builder, I think that there's people that have good teams. I always wanted it to be good programs so that you could have consistency year to year, that you built it from the foundation of people, of character, and just of hardworking and understanding how to collaborate while being competitive. But also, how do we build the fan base? How do we grow out into the community? I can't tell you how many free clinics we gave to all the coaches in Michigan, whoever wanted to come. We did free clinics for kids. We went out to like underprivileged areas and did clinics. We did, we wanted to reach out and of course share the game that we loved, right? We wanted to get people to value that and understand why it was so cool. And then we also wanted to have our players grow in so many things. I had players that, oh my gosh, they would tell me what their worst fear was. And
okay.
They'd always tell me what that was, and it was public speaking. And so I'd go, okay, so you're coming with me. I'm speaking in front of 400 people next week, and you're going to come with me. And they're like, no. And I go, okay, I'll throw you a softball. I'll have you come up with me. They expect me to do most of the speaking, so I will. And then I did this with Rachel, and she came in, and it was a scholastic athletic event for high achieving athletes that were students and so on and so forth, which she was. And I, you know, I brought her up there and I said, so like, what did you learn from going from high school to college, and what did it mean? You know, so I throw her this, and then she started speaking, and she did an excellent job of answering the question. She didn't have to come up with it herself, but she started to overcome and do that. At the end of the day, she was she had a summertime job shadowing at the Sparrow Hospital down the street, and you know, met the guy that was there that was hearing her story and so on and so forth, and it went through. And you know, every time somebody said they had a weakness doing something, I was sure to get find a way for us to get them through that and actually face it instead of fear it and run from it. And so you know, those values too were encompassed in this thing too, Mark, about how we have this platform to grow people and to grow strong women of the future and leaders. And sure enough, a lot of these women have gone into the business world and been very successful. And it is well worth that effort and that monetary value. And our fan base grew. I mean, we ended up in the last 5 years in the top 10 in the nation in attendance at Michigan State. And I think it was from reaching out to people. I had our players after the game, instead of running into the huddle, they were at the end of the rows coming down, shaking hands, saying, thanks, come to the game. Like, we did all those things to start gaining the popularity of the sport. And once people came, they came back. So it was exciting to see it really on all levels grow.
Inspiring. So, do you have any of your players that are coaches out there right now?
Yes, I do. But, you know, that's going to kill me thinking about all of them. You know, but, yeah. But yes, a lot of them have gone on and they're doing really well. And, you know, Kristen Kelsey, for instance, is the associate head coach at Minnesota, and Mike Golic's the head coach over at Central Michigan, and Tom Mendoza is the head coach at South Carolina. And just, I mean, they're all over the place. So,
yeah, that has to make you proud. In the Side Out Foundation, some part of what we talk about is caregiving and the importance of caregiving. Elena shared a story with me about your work with her during a tough time in her, you know, undergraduate life, and how you just got in there and helped her make it through that. So caregiving and coaching, what's that mean to you, of what you had to do or what you wanted to do for your athletes?
Well, you know, specifically to Elena's, but she's not the first or the last player that you're going to have going through tough times when you're coaching them, right? That's, those things happen. And, you know, I felt like she needed somebody, and she needed to be just to be heard as a person and not a volleyball player. So, you know, when you're seeing somebody struggle, you know, to be there to help them, that's really important. In the role that I was provided to be a head coach, I feel like you're the parents away from home, and you're the one that, you know, they need to have help them through tough times. And so I felt in that situation and others that it's awesome that my players can come to me and feel that they can do that and be vulnerable to talking about things that maybe have nothing to do with volleyball, but are problems or things that they're going through. So if I've always felt that was an important part of my job. And, you know, I think it's, I'm really happy that she felt that, but I am happy of all of them that have felt that they could do that. And I think, you know, it's getting harder and harder in this day and age to do that, but I think that's taking something away from it. from the coaching. I think that there is a lot of care that goes into being a college coach and a professional coach or high school coach. It's important because you do it for the right reasons. You know, you're doing it to help people grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There was also a mention just along these same lines of your sort of your family type program that you established with your husband, Jerry, and your sons, Connor and TJ, I believe, at some Thanksgiving gatherings for those folks that live far away and maybe they couldn't make it home for that holiday. And maybe even some, because your son played basketball at Michigan State for Coach Izzo, which is how fun is that? And some of those basketball players would also be in that mix at your house. Can you tell us a little bit about, you know, those gatherings and what that was like for you and for them?
Oh, it's so much fun. I love it. I just had the team over for Easter here. So, so it's, I love having big, you know, things at our house and I just want the team to feel comfortable, like that they're at home and they can just lay on the couch and watch a football game, depending on which one we're looking at, whatever time of the year, they're just sitting there like having fun, eating, talking, joking. You know, so it's been a big part of my programs forever, you know, and Thanksgiving, we're playing on Thanksgiving typically in the Big Ten. And so you have the NCAA tournament starting the following week. So you're prepping for that. But you wanted to, no matter what, make it feel like they have that comfort and they feel that hominess away from home and the love basically and the sharing and the whatever. So they feel all that. So that's been important to me. I've also, you know, like in addition to that, we always had the barbecues that were specific to only a handful of players at a time and doing things to really get to know them more individually that way and with the group. So I just had really felt like making them feel like I'm serving them and I'm helping that they understand that I am, you know, part of that.
Yeah. You're there for them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're going to switch gears here a little bit, and I want us to talk about the Pro League. I want us to talk about the Grand Rapids Rise team. What do you have to say about this experience for you and the process that you're going through in this new history-making opportunity for volleyball in the U.S.?
Well, I'll tell you, it's a lot. We've been going hard for a long time now, and it's been so cool to watch it grow and, you know, all the things. Again, I'm a learner, so I'm taking notes and what do we need to do differently? How do we improve it? What do we do? Because the sky is, you know, where we're going. We're going, you know, is so like, what can we do to improve it there? What can we do to make it really good right now? But there's been a lot going on, right? We're busy. We're busy, 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 busy. And it's because I'm wearing a lot of hats. Which I, you know, sort of enjoy, but you have to compartmentalize a lot and you have to get going on what it is you need to do. But I think it's been great. The play has been tremendous. If you've watched it, you see that there's, you know, the rallies are awesome. The play is great. Our fan base loves our team and they get behind them and are showing up in droves and just the excitement about it all is phenomenal. So to see it up and running and going, and even though we know that it's, you know, not always perfect, it's like everybody loves it and doesn't really know some of that. But like, we know we're growing and we're going to make it better and better. And I love that we're starting at this high point because you can all, you know, getting it from there is awesome. Yeah. And to see what the future holds is great.
Yeah. And just for those that are listening, the folks in the cities typically own these franchises. I love the stuff that's happening with your marketing and maybe I've looked into yours even more than everybody else's right now. But it's fresh. It's something that makes me go, man, if I was in that community, I would absolutely be at your game, cheering you guys on. That's, I'm sure that, you know, the full staff for you, that's a pretty big undertaking of folks that are working to make this really work for you.
Yeah. And it's, and I'm not going to say it's been totally easy, but it's been, you know, it's been really cool as we've been able to get out there and market. You know, we've had a lot of things going in the community to get people to the game. And when they've come to the game, and, you know, we're watching that grow and grow and grow. When they've come to the game, there's people that are just ecstatic about it and said, wow, I had no idea. That is so great. And that's really what I was working with all the staff here in the Grand Rapids Griffins. I was like, hey, get them to a game. That's what we have to do. Get them there, and they're going to return and have, you know, just renewed or continued customers. And we just want to do that. We want to have that. And they are, he goes after our first game, our first opener, and Matt, who does our tickets, he goes, Kathy, you wouldn't believe how many people called back and they wanted season tickets, even though they missed the first, and they all want to be on the floor and they all want to be in those suites and they all want to be doing these things. And he goes, it's just the response from it was phenomenal. And that's what, you know, my son brought a big group of people, you know, from his league teams and whatever. And they're all like, oh, that was awesome. And they're basketball players, not volleyball players. And they're like, this is awesome. We're coming back. And so we've heard that over and over and over again. And I just think putting the sport in front of people gets them to appreciate how athletic our team is and all the teams are. And just the long rallies have been incredible. And the major saves that you have during the game or during the rallies, you know, has made people just get so behind it. And it's cool.
Yeah. As somebody that's been in volleyball for a very long time, I absolutely love watching pro volleyball. And yeah, to see these athletes with so much skill, and they're so athletic and competitive. I mean, they're so competitive. And you're seeing that right now in women's basketball, where these NCAA games are just like, whoa, crazy good. But that competitiveness is really on fire right now, I think, for the women. And I love that the Pro League is showing that, and it is so special. These games are going long, tight, mm-hmm. and they are very entertaining. Yeah. And I love the, what is it called? What system is it that you use?
The Bolt 6, yeah.
Bolt 6, yeah.
Like the tennis where you see that, yeah. You see
if it's in the man, that's like a game changer, would think, for you all. It's quick. You guys don't have many delays. I mean, it's like, that's another part about what you guys are doing with this opening season. And I'm sure there's lots of things that you're picking up, as you said, along the way to do better. For some of the folks out there, for Kathy George, what's the difference, or what's it like for you to coach a professional team athlete and a college team athlete? What are some things, or are there things that are different?
There are, you're dealing with players that are older. Some of them have their own families already. The perspectives are different. They're not so young and, you know, wet behind the ears and trying to figure out what do I do? Where do I go to class? What do I, you know, like, how do I fit in? A little less like that, but they're more driven towards the improvement of themselves and the team and winning. And that focus is there. Many of them, we have some that have been playing pro over in Italy and Turkey for 12 years. We have about five or six that have played over there in Italy or Turkey and played in the highest levels. And then you have some that are just coming out of college. And so there's a wide range of experiences and levels that you're trying to mesh. They're very focused on their strength, their conditioning, their health, their eating habits, their sleep, what they can do to promote the longevity of their, where in college, a lot of these people are not eating right, not sleeping right, not doing any of that. Don't care about it. Don't see the value in it. and then these athletes are saying, hey, wait a second, this makes a difference. And in how you're going to be able to play your sport. And it helps you be really good one, you know, throughout and more consistently. So that's a message I'd love the college players to get, because they really need to do that. You know, this is what they do for a living. So they really mm-hmm. want to make sure that this is, that they're doing it to their best. And so they'll study more, about, you know, what they're doing and what the opponents are doing and such. For the most part, you're not having to really teach anybody anything. Like, you're not coming in. They've all had successes. They've all been all Americans or professional players. It's not like you're teaching them how to first do something like you will in college. And mm-hmm. you have sophomores and freshmen that are learning everything, and junior seniors that are kind of understanding and trying to help. So you have a variance there. We still have variance, but the skill level is higher. And there's different understandings of strategies as they've come from different colleges that have taught different things. But for the most part, you know, you are helping them be better and you want to teach them, but there are things that you might let go that you wouldn't have let go in your gym because that's not how you would do something. So, but if they're having a good amount of success with that, I'm not making changes to make changes just to say, hey, I'm the head coach, look at me. Mm-hmm. If they're doing it well, like that's fine. If there's something holding them back from being even better, that we'll talk about, like, and we'll talk about it. And I want the player then to initiate, hey, I want some help in those areas and let's go for it. And then we do extra sessions and do different things because we have more time to do that type of one-on-one work or, you know, just conversations about that or what have you. So it's just different. You're talking to a level of a person that's truly interested in getting themselves better.
Yeah. You know, watching the interviews with the athletes, I always find that they're so grateful. They're such good representatives of the league, and they're so positive. And positivity in our world right now is just wonderful. It's just like it sort of just can soak in when you get to come upon it. And I feel that definitely from you all. Hi there. I want to take a minute to tell you about the Dig Pink program. You most likely know I've got some history as a head volleyball coach. Coaching for me was about providing opportunities for my players to grow and learn life lessons and to become the best volleyball players they could be. At the Side Out Foundation, we believe in using the power and influence of sport to build student athletes as people on and off the court. Players learn the value and importance of giving back to their community, working as a team, and taking initiative to get involved, all while directly helping people living with metastatic breast cancer and funding game-changing research. That is the Dig Pink journey. Dig Pink gives those wanting to do good a chance to be a part of something bigger than just volleyball. For more information, head to our website, side-out.org. All right, back to the show. Couple of last questions here. For those that have never been really introduced deeply in the recruiting process for you, like the draft, the recruiting, what's that like on the professional level? Not everybody even understands it's on the college level yet, but it's getting better. There's lots of help out there. But can you walk us through a little bit of what that is? If we got some players out there that they think this is something I want to do at some point in time, but what it looks like.
Well, definitely if people are interested in playing, they should let the league know. And there are processes. We'll have where we can sign free agents and we can bring people and sign them to contracts. If the GM or whoever is ready to make those decisions, those determinations, that can be done. Contracts are signed at different levels of salary for next year. But there's that. And then so you're going to be pulling people from your current teams or from outside, still playing in overseas, and bring them in to kind of form your teams and start to build on that. But then you're going to have a draft again next year, which we ensure that there's so many draftees that we go through rounds of the draft so that we guarantee spots there available on the team. Our rosters can get really high, which I didn't do a lot of. I kept it a little bit more tight, but you can bring that in. But at the end of the day, you needed to get to 16 players. So, that are actively on your roster. And I really think that you're trying to put together a nucleus of players that can really help you win. I want to ensure that players coming out of college get those opportunities and that they will be able to get onto a team and really help and make that better and grow people up that way to become the future stars of this league and things like that. But to see that there's that you're just building this program from everywhere. You're looking for everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. I've looked everywhere. I talked to some players that played for me even in the past and, might have had some injuries and like, hey, what are you doing? How are you feeling? Where are we at? And I'm like looking all sorts of different places to see if there's players that can play at this level and are excited about it. I want to definitely look at it all.
Yeah. And next year you guys are bringing in three more teams into the league, which, wow, that's a travel schedule.
It actually might be better. It might be easier, but yes. Oh,
okay, good, good. I'm happy for you.
Yeah.
So the three more teams are coming in. And I believe I interviewed Jen Spiker for the show, and she talked about the number of emails she is receiving now from interest from players overseas that are seeing this league and how well it's being put together and the, you know, the details, the way you're taking care of the athletes. I hope that continues. It feels like this thing is building, and maybe this is a place where you can leave us with, how's Kathy leaving the world, or what you touch, leaving it better?
Well, you know, I hope that the answer is I have left it better. And I just try to live, you know, every day with the idea of what are we putting in and, you know, what are we putting in, not what are we getting out, you know? And it's just, can we just continue to help in some way? And it's the same way with a team. You talk about your team. Are you making us better or worse? Are you, you know, are you, how are you making an impact? And I'm very happy that I made this choice to do this, because I do know that probably, you know, in a few years when I'm in a nursing home, probably, you know, I'm looking back at it and I'm saying, oh, we did that. You know, I know that this opportunity, it's just opening doors for young girls that I see them at their little practices now. And they're like, maybe I could be this person or that person, you know, oh my gosh. And they practice a little harder. They get a little bit more determined. They see Janice, they see it in front of them when they go to these games. They know what it's supposed to look like at the highest level, and they're able to see it. And now they're seeing it on TV. And we start up with CBS this weekend and with national broadcast. And these kids are going to see that. Yeah. Like, men have had the enjoyment of watching all these analysts break down every part of the game for them so they understand it. Mm-hmm. Young volleyball players haven't had that to the degree. And so now they're understanding what they're trying to do before they even are starting to do it. Mm-hmm. And I think that helps so much. And so the level is going to continue to improve. It's just going to go through the roof, and it inspires people. It gets them excited. They have role models who are great on and off the court, and they have so much. So for so many reasons, it's helped young girls feel that they're empowered to be whatever they want. And I've always told my players, I said, I don't really care what you end up doing in your life, whatever, but I want you to have the choice to do anything you want to do. So whatever it is you choose, that's great. But I don't want you to feel that you couldn't have done this or couldn't have, because there were barriers. I want you to know that you can do anything you set your mind to, so go for it and then choose.
Well, this has been absolutely wonderful. And I want to thank you for being here today. And there's even, like, I have papers here with more questions, that there's so much that we could cover with you. But I'm going to have to let you go. It's been a pleasure, absolute pleasure to have you on. I'm a big fan of yours. And I love watching you, and appreciate the fact that you're taking on this challenge after retiring from coaching and coming back in. So thank you very much, Kathy.
Absolutely.
For being here today.
And thanks for having me. I really had fun. Nice seeing you again.
Thank you for listening. Please share your feedback with us at side-out.org.